The lamp was unlike anything I had ever seen in real life. It looked exactly like an oil lamp from a history book. I plucked it off of the branch and held it above my sore eyes. The glass was tall and shaped like a chimney, old, smudged, and burnt in places. The base was heavy and made of metal, with a small adjustable knob on the side. Inside, the flame was a clear, bright yellow. It wouldn't have looked out of place in any Gothic novel, but here, in a beachside forest, it didn't gel. Crack. A branch broke behind me. I whirled around, totally ready to throw the stinky lamp in someone's face. But there was no one there. I shone the light in the direction of the noise, but only saw deepening darkness. I felt the immense unknown behind me. I whirled around to the other side. I hadn't heard anything, but had that feeling that you get when you're watching a scary movie and the person goes into the dark room without checking the corners or behind them. You know that the minute you focus too much on what's in front of you, something comes up and snatches you from behind. To say I was terrified was an understatement. My arms and legs were tingling with a mad case of goosebumps. My breath was getting shorter by the second. I didn't want to stay in that forest a second longer, but the open plain and roaring ocean didn't seem like a great alternative. The only thing I could suss out was that this path in the woods was, in fact, a road. I crouched down and examined the leaves. There were faint marks of muddy tire tracks on some parts of them, and the path was wide enough for a car to drive down. Maybe if I followed the road away from the beach, I would come across a main road, or even better yet, a house. Then I could call my uncle and get picked up. But who was I kidding? Why didn't I just call my uncle right now? Excited, I carefully placed the lamp back on the dead tree's limb and fished out my phone. I could call him to explain what happened and where I thought I was, and everything would be fine. Then there was Dex. I should probably wait around and see if I could find him. Better yet, I could call him, too. I dialed Dex's cell number and put the phone to my ear. It rang twice, then a click. "Who is this?" My blood ran cold. The voice belonged to a woman. She sounded like an old Ingrid Bergman. "Hello? Is Dex Declan Foray there?" I asked, heart in my throat. "No, he's not," the woman answered slowly. I'm sorry, I must have gotten the wrong number. I looked around me and pulled my coat in closer against the darkness.
"It's not the wrong number, dear. He can't talk right now,"
she drawled on, her voice sounding rather wicked. Ridiculous, I told myself. You dial the wrong number because it's dark out and you're in the middle of a storm in the woods and you get some old woman on the line who just wants to talk.
"You're right. I do want to talk," the woman continued. "That's why I called."
Had I just said that all out loud? I put my hand to my forehead. It was clammy with cold sweat.
"I called you," I said barely above a whisper.
"I'm sorry, I was calling for my friend Dex and I got the wrong number." I quickly hung up and stared at the phone for a few seconds. It was my familiar iPhone, filled with music and useless applications. But it felt alien to me. I was about to press the home button to dial my uncle when my sight began to dim. I looked at the lamp. The flame was going out. "No!" I yelled and plucked it off the tree. I frantically turned the knob, hoping it would release more gas or wax or whatever was inside. If it didn't, in a few seconds I would be alone in the dark again. My actions did nothing. But just as the flame was almost extinguished, I saw something move out of the corner of my eye. I looked to my left. There was another lamp further down the road. It flickered just as the one I was holding went out for good. I didn't know how it happened to be a light like that. I didn't know if there was someone down there who turned it on. Perhaps that person had been hiding in the trees the whole time, watching me. Maybe it was the old woman on the phone. I shuddered at my morbid thoughts. I could either stand in the dark thinking about it, or I could move towards the light. At least in the light I could see what was trying to kill me. I know there was no indication that someone was trying to kill me, but whatever was going on was not normal, to say the very least, and my imagination and adrenaline were on maximum overdrive. I could almost feel a hand reaching out of the dark behind me and grasping my... I didn't finish that thought. I ran toward the next lamp until I was plucking it off the tree. It was the same as the other lamp.
The tree was the same as the previous tree. Had I run around in a circle? No, that was impossible. Thinking about it made my head spin. Lack of thought would serve me well and preserve my sanity. With the lamp dangling from one hand, I decided to follow the road while I could and get the fuck out of there. I plowed forward through the heavy woods of wet fir and dying oak trees, musty smells rising up with each step I took. The path ahead shook with the sway of the lamp. The way curved, and I was soon able to make out the depression that could have only been created by tires. My internal navigation system was placing me as heading northeast, which was the direction of Uncle Al's and exactly where I wanted to go. I didn't even care if I left Dex alone on the beach. For all I knew, he could be back at the house, waiting for me, or not waiting for me and playing video games, or back at his motel room, talking to his hot girlfriend on the phone. That last thought made me angry, and I was happy about it. It was better to stew like a jilted teenager over Dex than it was to fully grasp the terrifying situation I was in. I ran for what seemed like a couple of minutes, the road steadily curving into the dimness. Then, like before, the flame started to go out again. Oh, for fuck's sake, I screamed, the strength of my voice surprising me. It was embarrassing in a way, yet I still hoped that someone was nearby to hear it. I shook the lamp back and forth, screaming, fuck, fuck you, lamp. Terror and temper at an all-time high, I took the lamp and threw it as hard as I could against a tree. The glass smashed everywhere, and flickers of flame splayed out onto the leaves and roots. For a minute there, it looked like the whole tree would go up in flames, something that wouldn't be all that bad. A forest fire would at least attract attention. But in the end, the leaves were just too wet, and all light faded. Tears formed at the back of my eyes. I wanted to crawl up into a ball and cry my eyes out. My heart was stressed, my limbs felt numb, and I wasn't sure how much more horror I could take. I was lost in the woods, in the dark, with nowhere to turn. The blackness was disorienting as well. Dizzy, I put my hand out for a tree to support me. But my hand hit something that was more soft than solid. Soft and warm. Like wool. Like a sweater. Like someone wearing a sweater. My hand was on someone's chest. I screamed, retracted my hand, and started booking it down the path as fast as I could. I was running blind. The ground was undulating, and I could have smashed face first into a tree at any moment, but somehow my feet kept moving, one foot in front of the other. Before I knew it, I felt the wind in my face, the taste of salt in the air, and wet grass beneath me. Though it was in the opposite direction of where I was certain the road was leading, I was on the plateau again, where the lighthouse should be. I kept running until my feet started to slip. I instinctively knew I was near the edge. I stopped, not a moment too soon, and put my weight back on my heels. If the wind wasn't there, whipping off the waves and pushing me back, I probably would have gone over. I could see the gleam on the crests of the waves below and grasp the height of the cliff as it dropped beneath me. I took the deepest breath I could and said a silent prayer, willing myself not to think about what had just happened. Now that I was out of the woods, so to speak, and had found the coast, all I had to do was follow it with the ocean to the left of me, and there was no doubt I would come across my uncle's house. I exhaled and turned north, ready to jog back. A light came on beside me. It slowly flickered to life in the empty dark. I cautiously turned my head to my right and saw the lamp, that same oil lamp I had just smashed to ground moments earlier, floating beside me in midair. But I knew better. The lamp lowered, and a face came into my view, lit up by the flickering glow. It was the face of a forgotten man, dead and bloated. Skin was peeling off and oozing chunks. Tiny lice crawled out of its ears and nose. I had seen that face before in my darkest nightmares, and now it was right in front of me.
"You dropped this,"
it said. A low growl from its lipless mouth. Whatever strength I had left at that moment, I used all of it to turn and run. I made it several feet before the ground abruptly gave way, and I found myself airborne. I landed hard on the slope and tumbled down in dizzying circles, churning, rolling, falling, and falling forever. Until something broke my fall. Someone. They screamed. I screamed.
I had crashed into them at full speed and was launched again, finally coming to a painful rest on top of a dune. My hip bone bore the brunt of my weight, and I let out a yelp at the pain.
Perry,
a voice yelled. It was also low and deep. I remembered why I was running in the first place. The face of that skinless, pussing man was everywhere inside my head. I opened my eyes and tried to get to my feet as quickly as I could when a pair of arms came out from the night and grabbed me.
Perry!
It sounded like Dex. Oh, God, I prayed it was Dex.
Jesus, Perry, are you okay?
It was Dex. He was on his knees, leaning over me. It's me, I managed to say meekly. I could barely speak. I felt him shuffle closer and put his hand on my face, feeling my cheekbones.
Oh, shit. I didn't know where you went. One second you were beside me, and the next I saw the slide, so I went over to investigate it, and you were gone. I swear I only took two steps away from you, and then I lost you. I didn't know it would be so dark. I used my flashlight, but I couldn't see shit.
He was talking fast, his voice brimming with fear.
And I heard someone scream, and I knew it must have been you. I'm so sorry. Are you hurt?
He moved his hand up to my forehead and brushed my hair off of my face. It was at that moment that I noticed the wind wasn't as intense anymore. The storm seemed to be passing. I could even make out the outline of Dex's face, which was a major relief, since I was still afraid of something else. Just my hip and my sanity. He breathed out slowly. I saw his shoulders fall. He took his hand away from my face and gingerly placed it on my shoulder. My skin felt cold without his hand there.
What happened?
He asked, his voice so low it was barely audible. Can we go home? I couldn't function like a rational human being out here. I felt like the wires in my brain had short-circuited and fried themselves.
Of course.
He got to his knees and gently helped me up to mine.
Can you walk? Do you want me to carry you?
I laughed, despite myself. He wouldn't make it more than 5 feet without dropping me. I'm fine. He hoisted his camera onto his shoulder. I suppose I may have damaged it when I ran into him, but I honestly didn't give a shit, and grabbed the crook of my arm with his other hand. We walked quickly, raggedly, back toward the house. For the second time in a week, I felt like Uncle Al's place was the most wonderful sight on earth. Chapter 10. The house was empty when we came back in. It was only 10 p.m. at this point, but it looked like the boys had gone out somewhere. It was Saturday night, after all. Even Uncle Al was presumed missing, until I found a note he left on the kitchen table. Gone to play poker at a friend's house. I was absolutely exhausted. Saturday night or not, and all I could think about was going to bed and sleeping for the next couple of days. Only there were a few things we had to deal with first. Dex and I stood in the dim kitchen looking at each other. It was kind of awkward. Neither of us knew what to do or what to say. I felt like if I tried, I would break down in tears. I was bordered with crazy town. Dex sighed.
Well, I guess I should be going.
What? You can't go? I couldn't help but cry out. He glanced at the clock on the wall.
It's 10. I've still got to check into the motel.
He couldn't just leave me alone in this house after everything that happened. I felt the floodgates opening. I turned around and faced the fridge, trying not to blink and trying to control my breath. Dex was the last person I wanted to break down in front of. I wished I had a safety pin in my pocket so I could distract myself with a touch of pain.
Hey,
I heard him whisper and come closer. I waited for him to put his hand on my shoulder, but he didn't. He just stood behind me, probably unsure of what to do, which was every man's response whenever a girl was crying. But I wasn't crying. I was desperately trying to not let that happen. I sucked in my breath through pursed lips and regained control of my teasing tears. I was a tough cookie. I just had to suck it up. I turned around and looked at him. I smiled what must have been a very brave but very fake smile. I knew my eyes were moist and fearful, not matching up with my grin at all. He was staring at me, not looking as confused as I thought he might be, but curious. Okay, I said, you go check in. We'll meet in the morning and head back to Portland. He took another step closer, those relentless eyes searching mine for something, anything that would satisfy him.
Is that what you want?
He asked. No, it wasn't. I'm sorry I ruined your show, Dex, I said meekly. He stared at the ground for a second and shook his head.
You shouldn't apologize. It's not very becoming of you.
He looked up.
Besides, it's not my show, it's our show. Everything isn't lost yet, kiddo.
Everything isn't lost yet. Where had I heard that before? Say that again?
What?
Nothing. I could see that he didn't believe it was nothing, but he let it slide. He looked around.
Do you want me to stay here tonight?
He asked. There was no hesitation in his voice. Of course I wanted him to stay. I would have asked anyone to stay. This will sound stupid, I began, but do you mind staying until Uncle Owl or the twins get home? You can just hang out here, watch whatever you like, play video games. I'll go to sleep in the other room. I just don't want to be alone right now. He nodded.
Sure.
I felt bad for asking and for preventing him from checking in. I'm sorry, it's just, I can't even begin to explain what I saw out there. He took a step towards me, shaking his head.
Don't explain. I want to hear it, but we can discuss it in the morning. And please don't apologize, either. That's a weakness, not a strength. I don't need your apology. In fact, none of this would have happened if I hadn't left your side, so I'm the one who was sorry.
Dex, it was dark,
and so anyway, you can see why I don't mind having to stay here for a few hours.
Okay. I smiled. The relief that was pouring through my body was amazing. Thank you, I said, starting toward the spare room. And good night.
I'll be here if you need anything,
he called after me. I paused at the door to the room before closing it behind me. I didn't have to turn around to know that he was still there. The next morning finally arrived after waves of dreamless sleep. I say dreamless because I didn't remember anything appearing in my dreams, but that didn't mean my mind wasn't running in a half-delirious, half-sleep state the entire night. Despite being so tired that my body literally could not move an inch once I lay down on the bed, my mind still raced on in a horrific rampage. Flashes of the night, the lamps, the face, the trees, the sweater, the woman on the phone. It all kept swirling through my brain. I had so many questions. Nothing made any sense, which is probably why my brain was still trying to process it at 3 a.m., even when I wasn't consciously giving it an ounce of thought. Needless to say, I did not feel rested at all the next morning, especially when I woke up to the sound of rain on the roof and a heavy chill in the air. I wished getting out of bed wasn't an option. But I had places to go, home, to be precise, though every time I thought about stepping into the warmth and security of my house and seeing my family's faces, I also had the accompanying feeling of guilt. Ah, yes, me and my guilt. I felt horribly guilty for packing up and leaving this place without accomplishing a single thing. True, I managed to scare the shit out of myself, but that would have only been something if I had my camera with me. We would be heading back to Portland, knowing the entire weekend was a waste. Worse yet, I felt like it made me look bad, and it made my sister's blog look bad. Who would believe me now that I wasn't even able to go into the lighthouse again? I had told the world what we were doing, and now there was absolutely nothing to show for it. I was going to look like the biggest fool on earth. Not only me, but Dex, too. After I washed up and put on the barest traces of makeup, I stepped into my only other pair of clothes, which happened to be my comfiest. Big socks, tapered black yoga pants, a thick red long-sleeve tunic, and a wide studded belt. I knew I looked like I was going to a rock concert in the middle of winter, but I didn't care. I just hoped my docks were dry enough to wear after they had been so waterlogged. It was nice to care about normal things. I padded my way into the kitchen to see Uncle Al eating cereal at the table. He looked up and smiled.
Morning. Want some breakfast?
I shook my head and sat down.
You look tired. Did you not sleep well?
He sounded concerned. I thought I did, but probably not, I said, then eyed the coffee pot in the corner. Al followed my eye and got up.
Stay there. I'll get this in you, stat. You are just as bad as me when it comes to coffee, Barry.
I smiled gratefully. Was Dex still here when you came in last night?
Yes, he said while pouring me a cup of that gorgeous dark liquid. He was sitting here and writing in some notebook. He said he didn't want to leave you with no one else at home. He raised his eyebrow over that last sentence. I suppose that was quite gentlemanly of him. Still think there is something strange about that fellow.
No stranger than me. I shrugged and sipped back my drink.
I immediately felt more awake, which of course was bogus since coffee takes about 20 minutes to kick in. Oh, the power of our minds. Something I should keep in mind, considering.
Did you end up getting it all done?
I couldn't help but sigh. No, we ended up separated. I don't know where I was. A service road of some sort? In a forest? Al shrugged. I continued. Anyway, by the time I found Dex again, we decided to call it quits.
No ghosts?
I hesitated. Well, I don't know. I would like to think my mind was playing tricks on me.
You know that lighthouse has a very strange history, Perry. There is a reason I keep it boarded up.
Intrigued, I examined Al's face. His sagging eyes were soft, but serious. Go on, I encouraged. He leaned back in his chair.
First of all, I must state for the record that I do not believe in ghosts, but I do believe in evil, and I believe evil lives in that lighthouse.
Uncle Al's eyes turned the shade of coal. My blood did as well. Evil, in my books, was a million times worse than ghosts. You think it is evil and you let me go in there? I exclaimed. What happened to protecting your favorite niece? He shrugged again.
I can't tell you what you can and can't do. To you, the idea that it is evil might be as ridiculous as the idea that it is haunted to me.
I don't even know if it is haunted. That's why we plan to go back.
Whether it is or isn't to you doesn't matter. It is evil to me. You see, the lighthouse was cursed from the beginning. It took forever to build, and a few workers died in freak accidents. And once it was finally ready for operation, the light started malfunctioning. They kept trying, but it seemed at least once a week, whatever bulb they put in, it would fail to work after dark.
I nodded slowly, just as I had said. I must have read that somewhere. No way is my imagination that good.
They planned to build a new lighthouse instead, one that was offshore. Not only would the new lighthouse hopefully work better, but it wouldn't get swamped by the fog as often. So the Tillamook Lighthouse, just off the beach there, was opened. You know of the shipwreck that happened there?
I think so.
The night before the lighthouse was to be lit for the first time, our lighthouse here failed for the last time. A ship from Malaysia that was heading up to the Columbia River had crashed into the rocks beneath terrible Tilly out there. Everybody was thought to have drowned in the wreck, but that wasn't the case.
No? I asked.
Well, that officially was the story, but it didn't explain why the partially burned body of an ethnic woman was found tied to the lightkeeper's bed with strands of kelp.
I shivered violently, thinking of the charcoal tinges on the bed I saw in the lighthouse. Al stopped and gave me a surprised look. I waved it away in a motion for him to continue.
The lighthouse keeper at the time was nowhere to be found. It hadn't really surprised anyone, though. There had been rumors flying around that he had gone crazy here with the isolation. And back then, there wasn't anything around except for fog and trees. Or maybe he'd been tormented by the ghosts of the people who died building it. Some people started wondering about the supposed curse on the lighthouse. Maybe it had never been cursed to begin with. Maybe he was tampering with the bulbs all along.
Sure, but why?
Al took a languid sip of his coffee. Many reasons. Attention, boredom. And maybe he just wanted to see a couple of ships crash and burn.
I guess he got his wish.
Yes, he did. There had been numerous shipwrecks just off the coast here, but it took a long time for them to stop. They still continued even, with terrible Tilly lit up.
Well, if they found a body in the lighthouse, how did they know it came from the ship? I mean, was it even normal to have women on those ships? She was probably a local or something, caught in some creepy kelp sex game.
Al looked disgusted at the mention of a kelp sex game. It wasn't normal to have women on those ships, but people would be snuck aboard all the time. America, the brave new world, the better life. The body that they found was dressed in foreign clothing and was of Asian descent. So, rumor has it that she must have swam or floated to shore to this lighthouse and tried to find help there.
I took it all in as much as I could. Things were starting to make sense in the weirdest way possible. Part of me thanked my lucky stars that nothing horrible had happened to me when I was in the lighthouse with Dex. Part of me was more curious than ever to go back and start exploring it all over again. I believe this was a battle between the rational part of my brain and the crazy part of my brain. I hoped my rational part would win. So, she comes across Lighthouse Man.
Old Roddy, he interjected.
Right, I said slowly.
She comes crawling ashore and runs into old Roddy, who turns her into a sex slave before tying her up and attempting to burn her alive. How do we know she didn't wash up dead and then he had his way with her? Again, we both grimaced at my suggestions. You have a terrible imagination, Perry, Al chided. Well, that's humanity for you. We are a terrible species. Some of us are terrible. Some of us are good. What went on in that lighthouse must have been the height of all that plagues us. Like I said, I don't think it's haunted, but I think there's been some sort of curse, some evil, on that place all along. It's just waiting for another person to take in. He looked at me sternly, perhaps with a bit of fear in his eyes. I understood what he was saying. I felt what he was saying. Haunted by old Roddy or cursed by some demon, I knew there was something in that place that so desperately wanted me. And the most disturbing thing of all was that I kind of wanted it, too. And so what happened after? I asked. I needed to ignore my feelings. I mean, did you board it all up? Was it open when you first moved here? I didn't know what we were buying when we first moved here. I hadn't heard any of the tales, and neither had Paulette, his ex. But I knew deep, deep down there was something terrible about that place. I only stepped foot in it once, and that was the first time we all went to explore it. I think Matthew found a part of a jawbone from some sort of animal in one of the rooms. The place just felt too unsettled and dangerous, not to mention how weak the structures felt on the second floor. And really, what was the point of having your own defunct lighthouse? It made no sense to me, so we had it boarded up and pretty much forgot about it. Until last week. My lip wiggled sheepishly. Yeah, sorry about that. Don't worry, Perry. I'm just glad nothing happened to you. He watched me intently as if he was trying to suss out whether something had happened to me or not. No, I said slowly. I guess nothing really did happen to me, but since you think the lighthouse is evil, a lot of the feelings I had about the place would back that up. He patted my hand. And I'm glad you're not going back in there. I smiled at him. I felt happy for getting to know my uncle better. Maybe this weekend wasn't such a waste after all. Though, I must say, he started. I thought last night he... Before he could finish that thought, there was a loud knock at the door. I jumped in my seat, the coffee finally giving my heart a boost. Al got up and opened the front door. Good morning, sir. I've come for the lady. Dex was at the door, feigning importance. He had a cap on his head and tipped it jauntily. Come in, Dex. Al ushered him inside and closed the door. Dex walked over to me with a smile on his face. It also gave my heart a jolt. Good morning. Care for some breakfast before we go? He asked. Sure. I eyed the clock on the wall. Sorry for just dropping by. He looked at both of us. I tried calling your cell a few times, and I texted you, but there was either no answer, or I kept getting the wrong number. His voice lowered over that last part. I studied his face. His grin faltered slightly. Was he lying? No one had called or texted me at all that morning. I got out my iPhone just in case and looked it over. Nope, nothing. Anyway, Dex continued, looking at Al. I'm afraid I've got to steal away your niece now. I've still got to make it up to Seattle for tonight. Be my guest. I'm sorry you guys are walking away empty-handed, but I suppose these things always happen for a reason. I believe that very much, Uncle Al, Dex said. He looked at me. Will it take you long to pack? I slammed the last bit of coffee down. I hated having to rush. I got up and picked up my bag. All ready to go. He gave me the thumbs-up sign, then promptly turned on his heel and walked out of the house. I looked at Al and rolled my eyes by way of explaining his actions, which I couldn't. So I hugged him goodbye and thanked him for everything, then scuttled outside after Dex. The SUV was running in the driveway. The steam rising up from its tailpipe gave it a warm, welcome look in the morning downpour. Though it was only a few yards, I was fairly soaked when I swung the door open and jumped inside. Dex put his hand on the gear shift and gave me the once-over. Were you even alive in the 90s? Because it looks like that decade chewed you up and spit you out again, he said mockingly. He put the car in reverse and sped the car out of the driveway. I was born in 1988, for your information. Can't you count? I spat back at him. I was not in the mood for teasing of any sort. He turned to me with an excited leer. I could tell he was in the mood for teasing. You're only a child of the 90s if you had your teenage years during that decade,
I mean, look at you, all Doc Martens and Converse and leggings.
You're the one with the eyebrow ring, I shot back. I think it's better to emulate a time period you haven't properly lived through. Otherwise, you're just holding on to the past.
He laughed. I have no past to hold on to.
He flipped his MP3 player on. To my surprise, Billy Joel came on. Scenes from an Italian restaurant, to be precise. Dex began to sing along. Here was the infamous voice of Declan Foray. It was smoother, deeper, and more powerful than Joel's. It seemed to float over the words, vibrating with rich tones. It was gorgeous, hypnotic, and so out of place. He continued to sing until he noticed me staring at him. I must have looked very confused. Dex turned down the volume.
I do this in the mornings. So, where did you want to eat? I saw this great stereotypical diner in town that must serve the blackest coffee this side of the divide.
Sure, sounds good, I said as he went straight back into song, snapping his fingers and wiggling in his seat. He did this every morning? I looked at the clock. It was 8:30 a.m. Where on earth did he get the energy to put on a musical at this hour? I wasn't complaining, though. It was fascinating to listen to and to watch once I got past the weirdness of the spontaneous and strange direction. I didn't think it was possible to outshine Billy Joel, but Dex was doing so as he was speeding down the coastal highway toward Tillamook. He smiled and sang to me, it seemed. My heart skipped a beat again. Did he know the quickest way to charm the pants off me was to sing to me?
I didn't know you could sing, I lied.
No, he eyed me suspiciously.
I suppose there are a lot of things you don't know about me, kiddo.
But you will, in due time. Right, I thought sarcastically. I knew that after this weekend, there wasn't going to be any more time for us. A short while later, and after a couple more Billy Joel songs, which Dex unfortunately did not sing his way through, we pulled up next to the diner in Tillamook. Dex was right about it looking stereotypical. It had a 70s orange awning with god-awful faded font on top, Tilly's Diner. Painted on the dark, tinted windows were images of coffee cups, bacon, and eggs done up in that pebbly glass paint peeling at the corners. I couldn't tell from the outside if it was even open. Looking down the foggy, rain-logged street, I couldn't imagine anyone actually being alive in this town, let alone having breakfast. As we entered the diner, the smell of fat and griddled meat hit my nostrils. The door chimed loudly and echoed across the restaurant. There were a few patrons, surprisingly, but not surprisingly, they were ragged-looking seniors. We made our way to a table in the corner, which was covered by a green plastic tablecloth. The light was dim and terribly unflattering. This is charming, I said, sliding in the padded booth across from Dex.
It is, isn't it?
He said, without a trace of sarcasm. A rotund waitress came by. She had thick glasses, a bulbous red nose, and seemed to lack a chin. I couldn't look at her face too long without feeling nauseous, so I looked at her name tag. Nancy. Nancy tossed two laminated menus across the table at us with a hint of contempt. I smiled uneasily at her, and she did not return the sentiment. She turned her attention to Dex. He flashed her his sly, joker smile.
Good morning, Nancy. How are you on this gorgeous day?
Once again, it was spoken with utmost sincerity. Nancy looked at him suspiciously. Tilly's big plate breakfast is on special today. Want coffee?
We both do, yes, please.
Dex said, not even bothering to see if I agreed. I guess he knew that much about me so far. I knew he could sing. He knew I liked coffee. We were like old pals. Nancy left without acknowledging the order. Dex looked down at the menu and wiggled his brows.
I think she likes me.
You would think that, I said somewhat viciously. I couldn't help myself. Dex put the menu down and looked up at me with a strange look in his eyes.
Are you okay?
He made me uncomfortable. I regretted saying anything and fidgeted in my seat. I turned my attention to the menu. I'm fine.
Don't shit a bullshitter, he said angrily.
Now it was my time to be surprised. His eyes looked almost venomous. I was even more uncomfortable now. Thankfully, Nancy chose that moment to come by and slam two cups of coffee on the table. The dark drops spilling over the edges. Well? She looked at us, cocking her brow.
We'll both have the special, Dex said, without taking his contemptuous eyes off of my face.
I looked up at Nancy and gave her an apologetic look, but she took no notice, merely sighed and snatched the menus up off the table. I didn't even want the big plate special or whatever it was, but something told me it wasn't a good time to bring that up. I sucked on my lower lip and gradually brought my eyes to meet his again. "Remember when you told me I should let you know when you're creeping me out?" I reminded him. "This is one of those times." He held my gaze for a few seconds more before leaning back in the booth and running his hand through his hair.
"This is also the time you tell me what happened to you last night."
Ah, a light went on in my head. Now I knew one thing that made Dex tick, when he didn't know something. No wonder he was so intent on trying to read my thoughts. If he didn't know everything that was going on, it drove him nuts. He must be one of those boyfriends who constantly asks you what you're thinking. It probably drove his girlfriend up the wall. "Okay, then. I'll tell you from start to finish. Just keep an open mind, refrain from thinking I am crazy or delusional, though I may very well be, and don't say anything until I'm done." His dark eyes lighted up a smidge.
"I promise."
I sighed, took a long gulp of the terrible black coffee for strength, and told Dex everything, starting with my dreams, what I made up on the beach, about what Uncle Al told me, and what I saw last night. When I was done, the platters arrived on our table, and I was suddenly ravenous from talking excitedly for so long. I shoved a greasy slice of Canadian bacon into my mouth and said, "And now you know everything I know, which is nothing. Happy?" Dex had stayed true to his word and remained quiet and attentive during the whole spiel. Even now, he wasn't saying anything. He just pursed his lips until he resembled a sexy duck before digging into his breakfast. I tried not to watch him eat, even though I could see from the furrow between his brows that he was deep in thought, trying to make sense of what I told him. We ate in silence. The longer he went without saying anything, the more torn up I felt inside. Did he believe me? Did he think I was mental? Because if there was anyone at this table who was mental, I knew it wasn't me. That said, I did have a dead man trying to hand me an oil lamp last night.
"You actually believe all that?"
he said. "What do you mean?" I asked slowly. "Of course, it happened. I don't know how else to explain it, but that's what happened." I looked at him closer. My mouth dropped a little bit. Was he doubting this whole thing? "You think I'm making all of this up? This was your idea." He laughed.
"Come on, Perry. We didn't really find anything the first time we were out here. I wouldn't blame you for trying to make a mountain out of a molehill."
I could barely form thoughts, let alone speak at his assumptions. "You think I'm faking it?"
"I think you see what you want to see," he said and shoveled an entire pancake into his mouth.
I was too livid to even consider how gross that was. I couldn't help but reach across the table and grab his forearm. I squeezed it hard. He looked up at me, pancake frozen inside his wide yap. "Dex," I said with as much intensity and seriousness as I could muster, "I'm not lying. I don't care about any of this. You found me. In the end, you found me. I'm just telling you the truth. You think that lighthouse is haunted. You're looking for all the proof, but I'm telling you now that I know it is. It is." He searched my face while slowly chewing the pancake until it was gone. I didn't know what he thought, but there was nothing more I could do at this point. "Look," I finally said, "I'll prove it. Let's go there right now. Hell, let's go tonight. We can drive back to Portland after. I need to show you. I need you to believe me." He shook his head.
"No can do, kiddo. I've got to get back tonight."
"Why? What do you have to do? Is your girlfriend so paranoid that she won't let you out of her sight for the weekend?"
He was taken aback at that and managed to laugh. "My girlfriend? Jen doesn't give two shits if I'm there or not."
That was news to me. I tried not to let that show.
"No," he continued. "I'm just done with it. I don't think I should get any deeper into this whole thing. I've got enough footage, and with your permission, I could combine it with what you shot last week."
"What if I say no?" I countered, arms crossed.
"I'd say you're being awfully stubborn and acting like a typical young girl who isn't getting her way,"
he shot back.
"And then I'd shrug, wipe my hands clean of this whole thing, and go home."
"To your girlfriend who doesn't even care if you're there or not?" He threw down his napkin.
"Why do you care?"
"I don't care. I just think you're chicken shit."
"Excuse me?"
I could tell the anger was rising behind those eyes, but I didn't care. I was past caring and beyond angry myself. "That's right," I reinforced. "I think you are chicken shit. You're happy to call this whole thing off because you're too scared to go back there because you actually think I am telling the truth.
And the truth scares you. He leaned in closer across the table and this time grabbed my forearm.
You scare me, Perry. He growled and gave my arm a sharp squeeze. You.
I eyed his grip. He met my eyes and then very slowly, hesitantly, released me.
This is going to be a really awkward car ride back home, isn't it? I asked, a trace of amusement in my voice. The whole situation was ridiculous.
He sighed and leaned back, pushing his plate away from him.
I hope I'm driving you as crazy as you've been driving me, I said bluntly.
He shook his head and got out of the booth.
I'm going to go pay, he muttered, despite the fact that I wasn't done eating.
It didn't matter, though. I had had enough, too, of the food, of everything.
At least breakfast was free. I watched him approach the till and decided it would be a good time to get a breath of fresh air before the hellish ride back. I walked out of the diner and took in a deep breath. I closed my eyes and looked up at the sky, letting the rain fall on my face and feeling like it was washing away the dust that was accumulating inside my brain. I exhaled through my lips, slowly and fully. I opened my eyes before I started to feel a bit off balance. There was a woman, an old woman, standing directly in front of me. She was grinning a bright smear of red, waxy paint. The lipstick was on her yellowing teeth. My breath caught on the way out. I had seen her before in the lobby of my office. I don't know how long we stood there staring at each other. I felt paralyzed, unable to breathe, move, or talk. She didn't move either, just kept up that demonic grin. She slowly reached over with a bony hand and placed it on my shoulder. Her hands were covered with many rusted cocktail rings. The white taffeta coat she was wearing had clownish puffballs on it. They were all different colors, bright yellow, orange, red, blue, and green. She really did look like some satanic clown's aging mother. She started to speak. Rather, her sticky red lips moved, but no sound was coming out. She spoke like this for a few seconds before she finally said, Declan. What about him? I thought inside my head, the terror competing with curiosity.
He's got some stories to tell, she whispered, her voice low, almost metallic sounding, as if she was speaking through a phone.
There was a familiar accent on certain syllables.
He'll tell you one day about what happened to him. You just need to watch him. Watch out for him closely. You're cut from the same cloth.
She took her hand away, and with her eyes focused on the diner, walked straight inside as her coat ruffled behind her in the light breeze. I stood still, my breath coming back. I realized I was soaked to the bone from the rain and maybe sweat. I didn't care. I looked around to see if anyone else had witnessed what had just happened, but there was no one on the wet gray street. I looked back at the diner and took a hesitant step toward it, wondering why she had gone in there and if anyone else noticed how fucking freaky she was. I dipped low, trying to see inside through the dark tint and the stupid food paintings. I couldn't make out anything except a few shadows of people sitting down at their tables. I put my face at the window and cut my hands around it, not caring if anyone inside saw me trying to be a peeping Tom. I had thought I saw some sort of commotion when the door flung open and Dex burst outside. I jumped a few inches off the ground and almost knocked my head against the glass. He looked around him, pure panic in his eyes, and then spotted me. He reached over and grabbed my arm and pulled me roughly towards him.
We've got to go. Now.
We ran over to the car. My mind was racing. What was going on? Who was that lady and why did she warn me about Dex? Watch out for him? What did that even mean? I jumped in the passenger seat and barely closed the door before Dex stomped on the gas and the SUV rocketed down the street, veering side to side on the slick roads. I decided to heed her advice. I would keep an eye on him. He looked like a man possessed. I turned my head to look back at the diner, but Dex yelled, "Don't look back there. Keep looking forward." Hard in my throat, I did what he said. "What the fuck just happened?" I squeaked out once he brought the car off the street and onto the highway. He just shook his head, his hands gripping the steering wheel so tightly that his knuckles were a hard shade of white. Dex, talk to me. Slow down.
I yelled as the car went skidding around a corner, water flying everywhere, my body straining against the seatbelt. He kept his foot on the gas, speeding in deathly silence. He reached over and locked all the doors in the car. Watched X, indeed. I felt like he would be the last thing I would ever see. Chapter 11. We were speeding crazily around the wet corners on the 101 heading north. With the doors locked for some inexplicable reason, and Dex refusing to utter a word or even look my way, I was on the narrow verge of having a freakout. It was obvious that Dex was having one himself, as the look of absolute fear never left his eyes. I didn't know what to do. Part of me wanted to grab hold of the steering wheel and pull the car over myself. But as strong as I was, he was no doubt stronger, and in this weather I'd probably end up flipping the car, or worse. I wondered if screaming would help, or if pleading would help, or if crying would help. Billy Joel was still playing from the speakers, which made the situation even more absurd. And then it dawned on me. I knew what it was. I knew what Dex was afraid of. It all made sense. He saw it, her, with his own eyes. You saw her, I said, keeping my voice as calm as possible. Didn't you? Dex's hands tightened on the wheel, though his foot came off of the pedal slightly. His eyes darted towards me and then back to the road again. I leaned in closer, careful not to invade his space. I saw her too, I confided. And I've seen her before that back in Portland. She told me things. Dex's brow furrowed.
What did she say?
So you did see her. He ignored me.
What did she tell you?
Pull over and I'll tell you. I won't talk to you while you're like this. You're going to get us both killed. Just like that, Dex stepped on the brakes and yanked the Highlander down a rural road flanked by waving chestnut trees. The car lurched to a stop, and he impatiently flipped the gear into park and flicked off the ignition. He took off his seatbelt and adjusted himself in his seat so he was facing me. The rain was falling hard on the roof. I had always found that to be one of the most soothing sounds, and this time was no different.
Talk,
he commanded bluntly. His eyes were noncommittal. His long, wide mouth was set in a grim line. His hat had slid down a bit, adding shadows to his face. The front of his hair flopped onto his forehead. I reached over and tilted the hat's brim up off his brows and gently smoothed his hair to the sides. His forehead was hot and smooth underneath my hands, his hair slightly damp from sweat and hair product. Touching him felt strangely intimate, like I was really seeing him for the first time. I don't know why I did it. I guess some part of me instinctively wanted to soothe him. It was the first time I'd seen him look remotely vulnerable. I was only a hand's length away from his face. His eyes, though unreadable, were looking deep into mine. I could have easily sat there for a long time just staring at him, holding his gaze. If I imagined hard enough, I could almost see lightning flowing between us in an unbroken line. But the more I stared at him like that, the more I became conscious of how much of a psycho I must have looked. I took my hands off of his forehead and dropped my eyes to the seat. The bolts were broken. I noticed how heavily my heart was beating in my chest. What was it about this man that agitated not only my mind, but my heart as well? There was only one way to find out. I took a deep breath and dove in. Last week at work, I said, I was waiting for the elevator. There was no one in the lobby, or so I thought. Then I noticed this lady sitting totally motionless on the couch. She was like no one I had ever seen before, like someone out of a David Lynch film, almost. I met his eyes again. They had never left mine, like they were waiting for my gaze to return to his. I felt like he was trying to hypnotize me. I was torn between feeling self-conscious and wanting to look away, or to fall deeper into them and lose myself. Then there was that accompanying feeling of tightness in my chest, the feeling that I wasn't getting enough air, that I was drowning in this indescribable whirlpool. I couldn't take it anymore, and quickly diverted my eyes to the outside of the car. The rain and interior fog had blurred the windscreen, but I could still make out the shapes of the trees dancing in the background. I focused on their movements, all the while knowing he was still looking at me. I continued talking. She was wearing, well, it looked like she was dressed for her prom, only she had to be about 80 or something. She had perfectly curled hair, you know, like they did in the 40s, set with pins and everything, and a whole face full of the thickest makeup ever, like grease paint. And her lipstick, my God, I have never seen such a sloppy job. She even had it on her teeth, which was scary because this freak would not stop smiling at me, even as the elevator doors were closing. I shot a glance at Dex to make sure he was still listening, and gasped. There was a trail of blood running out of his mouth. He was biting his lower lip so hard that he was drawing blood. His eyes remained motionless and fixed on mine. I started to wonder if he was truly looking at me, or if he had gone into a trance, or was experiencing some kind of seizure. "Dex, you're bleeding," I said, trying to hide the horror in my voice. With a measured movement, he languidly licked his lips and dropped my gaze. I quickly reached into my jacket pocket and pulled out a tissue. He reached for it in a stupor. I pushed his hand aside and dabbed the tissue on his lips. With my other hand, I leaned on his shoulder and bent down so that my face was right in front of his. No lazy gazing this time. I needed him to see me. "Are you okay?" I asked politely but firmly. "Seriously, answer me, Dex. Otherwise, I'm calling my uncle for help because I don't know what to do with you right now." He took the tissue from my hand, balled it up, and then tossed it in the back seat. He sucked back on his lips for a few seconds. The individual hairs in his mustache bristled. For a mere moment, I entertained the idea of sucking his lips myself. It was an inappropriate thought, above all else, and I pushed it out of my head. He released his lip. It had stopped bleeding. His eyes looked up at the ceiling, and he took in a deep breath. I felt that maybe I wasn't helping. I took my hand off of his shoulder and sat back.
2 weeks ago, he started, his voice rich like cream, I took Jennifer to Bainbridge Island.
Oh, yes, Jennifer. The main reason why sucking his face would be oh so inappropriate. I sat further back still.
I actually had to move there from New York at the end of high school to live with... Well, anyway, needless to say, I had never gone back there since I moved. But Jen was insisting that we at least pay the place a visit, since she had heard there were a few trendy wineries popping up here and there. It's all about the fucking trends.
I nodded, eager to know more about him. He continued.
Finally, I just gave up and told her we would go for a day trip. The weather was gorgeous, and it had been fucking fabulous until this last week. And yeah, there were a lot of bad memories, still locked up and lurking around different corners, but I felt like I was close to putting that part of my past all behind me and moving forward, as we all hope to do. So, Jen decides she wants to get some gelato at this busy new store, even though I know she's gonna start regretting it and throwing up in the bathroom after she eats it. She's lactose intolerant and uses it as an excuse to binge and purge, you know, an acceptable form of bulimia. I hope you don't subscribe to that bullshit.
He wagged his finger at me. I shook my head adamantly.
Anyway, she goes and waits in this retardedly long lineup for pansy-ass ice cream, because that's all gelato is. So I decide to occupy myself and take a wander down by the docks. If there is anything I can't stand, it's waiting for people. Keep that in mind, Perry. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So I walk down to the docks. It's a gorgeous day, and people are milling about doing their usual tourist thing. I'm watching a middle-aged couple getting ready to leave in their sweet sailboat when I see something out of the corner of my eye. Someone is sidled up next to me. Now, I love making inappropriate banter with strangers. I seriously do, but on this particular day, I don't feel like talking to anyone. So I ignore this new person who's standing beside me. I probably did this for about 3 minutes or so, long enough for the boat I was watching to motor away. Finally, I just can't take it anymore. For an instant, I think it's probably someone looking the other way. Fascinating how we always assume things revolve around us. But I was right to begin with. I see this old lady standing beside me, staring right at me. She is exactly as you have described, right down to the lipstick on her teeth. She was also wearing something highly inappropriate. So much so that later on, when I described what I saw to Jen, I was shocked that she hadn't seen her. How could she not see an old lady wearing Dame Edna makeup and a gown ripped straight off of Betty Davis's dead body?
Dex's tail was creating shivers up my spine. "And what happened?" I asked, enthralled. I was suddenly very glad we were close to each other in this car. I was about ready to jump into his arms. He cleared his throat.
Well, I don't know. We must have stood there for some time, though maybe it was just a few seconds. Her smile was so omniscient. I couldn't think of what to do or say, and the funniest thing was that she seemed oddly familiar. She said some stuff to me that, well, she seemed to know everything about me. She said... His voice trailed off, and he looked down at his hands. A lock of hair fell forward again. I waited for him to continue, not wanting to pry, since the topic seemed to be more than personal. Basically, she said that I'd find someone who could help me find what I was looking for. Someone who would help me get closure. Then she started to leave. For some reason, I just couldn't bring myself to run after her as slowly as she was moving. I could only ask her who. She told me exactly this. You will find her in the lighthouse. And then she went around the corner and was gone.
You didn't go after her?
He shook his head, the white of his eyes showing clearly. I couldn't. All I could think was that I had to get back to Jen. I don't want to see that woman again.
But she knew all that stuff about you that no one else would know, I cried out.
I know, he said, but I didn't want to know how she knew.
The lighthouse, I mused.
Well, it didn't make much sense to me until later when I came across, well, you. And it still didn't make any sense, at least at the time, but...
He looked at me with a tinge of yearning. Maybe it was amazement? Maybe I was seeing what I wanted to see.
Anyway, I knew I had to get you on board with my idea, no matter what.
You told the twins that it was your boss's idea, and that you were just doing what the man says, I pointed out, still annoyed over that revelation last night.
I lied, he said simply.
Why?
Because sometimes I lie, Perry. We all lie, even you. But not everyone is brave enough to admit it.
I wasn't satisfied with that unsettling answer. I knew it would only serve to make me second-guess everything he did and said now, but I ignored it and urged him to continue. So you wanted me because I was the lighthouse lady?
At first. And then it made me realize that perhaps it was a sign that I was on the right track, that this was the time to finally break away from Wine Babes and get something started on my own. Wine Babes was always Jen and Jimmy's idea. I was only brought on at a later date when the last cameraman quit.
Well, I said and sat back against my seat. I wasn't sure what to make of this now.
Well, he agreed.
We sat in silence for a few moments. Finally, I had to ask. And then you saw her, just now in the diner. What did she say to you that made you freak out like that? His eyes flashed with fear. He fixed them on me. They held me there.
I'd rather not say. Basically,
he sighed and started to chew on his lip. I watched him intently to make sure he didn't draw blood again.
She basically said that this was only the beginning, and that we had to finish what we started.
And what do you think that means? I asked. He ignored me.
Did she say anything to you?
I felt that if I told him what she said, if there was some truth to it, which I believe there was, it would only put him on the spot. But unlike Dex, I couldn't lie. He would know. She said that you'd tell me what happened to you, whatever that means, and that I had to watch you. I left out the part about being cut from the same cloth. That notion was too ridiculous to even mention, and kind of insulting.
Watch me? For what?
He asked, almost uninterested. I don't know. She's some creepy clown lady. He managed to smile and stared at his fingernails.
Yeah, she is. But she knows us. She knows both of us.
She knows you, I pointed out. I only saw her once before this, and now she only talked about you.
She mentioned you, too, he admitted casually.
My heart flitted a beat. I felt he was about to say something damning, though I had no idea what that could be. She knew something deep, dark, and secret about Dex. What deep, dark, and secret thing could she know about me? What did she say?
She said that I needed to take care of you, that you needed me, and that I had to keep an eye on you.
He laughed at that last part.
I think she was implying that you could be dangerous.
Me? Dangerous? I gave Dex a wildly bewildered look to amplify the doubt and confusion that I was feeling.
Don't look so shocked, he said calmly, I can see it.
See what?